The choices seemed very clear to Rincewind. There was the city of Hung Hung under siege, apparently throbbing with revolution and danger, and there was everywhere else. Therefore, it was important to know where Hung Hung was, so that he didn't blunder into it by accident. He paid a lot of attention to Mr. Savaloy's instructions, and then rode the other way. He could get a ship somewhere. Of course, the wizards would be surprised to see him back, but he could always say there'd been no one in. The hills gave way to scrubland, which in turn led down to an apparently endless damp plain, which contained in the misty distance a river so winding that half the time it must have been flowing backwards. The land was a checkerboard of cultivation. Rincewind liked the countryside in theory, providing it wasn't rising up to meet him and was for preference happening on the far side of a city wall. But this was hardly countryside. It was more like one big hedgeless farm. Occasional huge rocks, looking dangerously erratic, rose out of the fields. Sometimes he'd see people hard at work in the distance. As far as he could tell, their chief activity was moving mud around. Occasionally he'd see a man standing ankle-deep in a flooded field, holding a water buffalo on the end of a length of string. The buffalo grazed and occasionally moved its bowels. The man held the string. It seemed to be his entire goal and occupation in life. There were a few other people on the road. Usually they were pushing wheelbarrows loaded with water buffalo dung, or possibly mud. They didn't pay any attention to Rincewind. In fact, they made a point of not paying attention. They scurried past, staring intently at the scenes of mud dynamics or bovine bowel movement happening in the fields. Rincewind would be the first to admit that he was a slow thinker. In fact, he'd be about the 73rd to admit it. But he'd been around long enough to spot the signs. These people weren't paying him any attention because they didn't see people on horseback. They were probably descended from people who learned that if you look too hard at anyone on horseback, you receive a sharp, stinging sensation, such as might be obtained by a stick around the ear. Not looking up at people on horseback had become hereditary. People who stared at people on horseback in what was considered to be a funny way never survived long enough to breed. He decided to try an experiment. The next wheelbarrow that Trundle passed was carrying not mud, but people, about half a dozen of them, on seats either side of the huge central wheel. The method of propulsion was secondarily by a small sail erected to catch the wind, but primarily by that pre-eminent source of motive power in a peasant community, someone's great-grandfather, or at least someone who looked like someone's great-grandfather. Cohen had said, "There's men here who can push a wheelbarrow for 30 miles in a bowl of millet with a bit of scum in it. What does that tell you? It tells me someone's porking all the beef." Rincewind decided to explore the social dynamics and also try out the language. It had been years since he'd last used it, but he had to admit that Rid Cully had been right. He did have a gift for languages. Agatean was a language of a few basic syllables. It was really all in the tone, inflection, and context. Otherwise, the word for military leader was also the word for long-tailed marmot, male sexual organ, and ancient chicken coop. "Hey there, you," he shouted. "To bend bamboo? An expression of disapproval? Stop?" The barrow slewed to a halt. No one looked at him. They looked past him, or around him, or towards his feet. Eventually, the wheelbarrow pusher, in the manner of a man who knows he's in for it no matter what he does, mumbled,
"Your honour commands?"
Rincewind felt very sorry later for what he said next. He said, "Just give me all your food. And unwilling dogs, will you?" They watched him impassively. "Arranged beetles? Variety of waterfall? Money. There was a general fumbling and shifting among the passengers. Then the wheelbarrow pusher sidled towards Rincewind, head down, and held up his hat. It contained some rice, some dried fish, a highly dangerous-looking egg, and about a pound of gold in big round coins. Rincewind stared at the gold. Gold was as common as copper on the counterweight continent. That was one of the few things everyone knew about the place. There was no point in Cohen trying any kind of big robbery. There was a limit to what anyone could carry. He might as well rob one peasant village and live like a king for the rest of his life. It wouldn't be as if he'd need that much. The later suddenly caught up with him, and he did indeed feel quite ashamed. These people had hardly anything, apart from loads of gold.
Thanks. Thank you. Yes. Just checking.
Yes, you can all have it back now. I'll, keep the elderly grandmother to run sideways. Oh, damn. Fish. Rincewind had always been on the bottom of the social heap. It didn't matter what size heap it was. The top got higher or lower, but the bottom was always in the same place. But at least it was an Ankh-Morpork heap. No one bowed to anyone in Ankh-Morpork, and anyone who tried what he'd just tried in Ankh-Morpork would by now be scrabbling in the gutter for his teeth and whimpering about the pain in his groin, and his horse would already have been repainted twice and sold to a man who'd be swearing he'd owned it for years. He felt oddly proud of the fact. Something strange welled up from the sludgy depths of his soul. It was, to his amazement, a generous impulse. He slid off the horse and held out the reins. A horse was useful, but he was used to doing without one. Besides, over a short distance, a man could run faster than a horse, and this was a fact very dear to Rincewind's heart. "Here," he said, "you can have it. For the fish." The wheelbarrow pusher screamed, grabbed the handles of his conveyance, and hurtled desperately away. Several people were thrown off, took one almost look at Rincewind, also screamed, and ran after him. "Worse than whips," Cohen had said. "They've got something here worse than whips. They don't need whips anymore." Rincewind hoped he'd never find out what it was, if it had done this to people. He rode on through an endless panorama of fields. There weren't even any patches of roadside scrub or taverns. Away among the fields were shapes that might be small towns or villages, but no apparent paths to them, possibly because paths used up valuable agricultural mud. Finally, he sat down on a rock that presumably not even the peasant's most concerted efforts had been able to move, and reached into his pocket for his shameful dried fish lunch. His hand touched the bundle of papers Mr. Savaloy had given him. He pulled them out and got crumbs on them. "This is what it's all about," the barbarian teacher had said. He hadn't explained what it was. "What I Did on My Holidays," said the title. It was in bad handwriting, or rather bad painting. The Agateans wrote with paintbrushes, assembling little word pictures out of handy components. One picture wasn't just worth 1,000 words, it was 1,000 words. Rincewind wasn't much good at reading the language. There were very few Agatean books, even in the Unseen University Library. And this one looked as though whoever had written it had been trying to make sense of something unfamiliar. He turned over a couple of pages. It was a story about a great city containing magnificent things. Beer strong like an ox, it said, and pies containing many, many parts of pig. Everyone in the city seemed to be wise, kind, strong, or all three, especially some character called the Great Wizard, who seemed to feature largely in the text. And there were mystifying little comments, as in, "I saw a man tread upon the toes of a city guard who said to him, 'Your wife is a big hippo,' to which the man responded, 'Place it where the sun does not shed daylight, enormous person.' Upon which the guard..." This bit was in red ink, and the handwriting was shaky, as if the writer was quite excited. "Did not remove the man's head according to ancient custom." The statement was followed by a pictogram of a dog passing water, which was for some obscure reason the Agatean equivalent of an exclamation mark. There were 5 of these. Rincewind flicked through the pages. They were filled with the same dull stuff, sentences stating the blindingly obvious, but often then followed by several incontinent dogs. Such as, "The innkeeper said the city had demanded tax, but he did not intend to pay, and when I asked if he was not afraid, he vouchsafed," complicated pictogram, "them all except one, and he can," complicated pictogram, "himself." Urinating dog, urinating dog. He went on to say, the pictogram indicating supreme ruler is a... Another pictogram, which after some thought and holding up the picture at various angles, Rincewind decided meant a horse's bottom, "and you can tell him I said so." At which point a guard in the tavern did not disembowel him, urinating dog, but said, "Tell him from me also," urinating dog, urinating dog, urinating dog, urinating dog, urinating dog. What was so odd about that? People talked like that in Ankh-Morpork all the time, or at least expressed those sentiments, apart from the dog. Mind you, a country that had wiped out a whole city to teach the other cities a lesson was a mad place. Perhaps this was a book of jokes, and he just hadn't seen the point. Perhaps comedians here got big laughs with lines like, "I say, I say, I say, I met a man on the way to the theatre, and he didn't chop my legs off, urinating dog, urinating dog." He had been aware of the jingle of harnesses on the road, but hadn't paid it any attention. He hadn't even looked up at the sound of someone approaching. By the time he did think of looking up, it was too late, because someone had their boot on his neck. "Oh, urinating dog," he said, before passing out. There was a puff of air, and the luggage appeared, dropping heavily into a snowdrift. There was a meat cleaver sticking into its lid. It remained motionless for some time, and then, its legs moving in a complicated little dance, it turned around 360 degrees. The luggage did not think. It had nothing to think with. Whatever processes went on inside, it probably had more to do with the way a tree reacts to sun and rain and sudden storms, but speeded up very fast. After a while, it seemed to get its bearings and ambled off across the melting snow. The luggage did not feel, either. It had nothing to feel with, but it reacted in the same way that a tree reacts to the changing of the seasons. Its pace quickened. It was close to home. Rincewind had to concede that the shouting man was right. Not, that is, about Rincewind's father being the diseased liver of a type of mountain panda and his mother being a bucket of turtle slime. Rincewind had no personal experience of either parent, but felt that they were probably at least vaguely humanoid, if only briefly. But on the subject of appearing to own a stolen horse, he had Rincewind bang to rights. And also, a foot on his neck. A foot on the neck is 9 points of the law. He felt hands rummaging in his pockets. Another person, Rincewind was not able to see much beyond a few inches of alluvial soil, but from context it appeared to be an unsympathetic person, joined in the shouting. Rincewind was hauled upright. The guards were pretty much like guards as Rincewind had experienced them everywhere. They had exactly the amount of intellect required to hit people and drag them off to the scorpion pit. They were league champions at shouting at people a few inches from their face. The effect was made surreal by the fact that the guards themselves had no faces, or at least no faces they could call their own. Their ornate black enamelled helmets had huge mustachioed visages painted on them, leaving only the owner's mouth uncovered, so that he could, for example, call Rincewind's grandfather a box of inferior goldfish droppings. What I did on my holidays was waved in front of his face.
Bag of rotted fish!
I don't know what it means, said Rincewind. Someone just gave it to me.
Feet of extreme rotted milk!
Could you perhaps not shout quite so loud? I think my eardrum has just exploded. The guard subsided, possibly only because he'd run out of breath. Rincewind had a moment to look at the scenery. There were two carts on the road. One of them seemed to be a cage on wheels. He made out faces watching him in terror. The other was an ornate palanquin carried by 8 peasants. Rich curtains covered the sides, but he could see where they'd been twitched aside so that someone within could look at him. The guards were aware of this. It seemed to make them awkward. If I could just explain...
Silence, mouth of...
The guard hesitated. You've used turtle, goldfish, and what you probably meant to be cheese, said Rincewind.
Mouth of chicken gizzards.
A long, thin hand emerged from the curtains and beckoned just once. Rincewind was hustled forward. The hand had the longest fingernails he'd ever seen on something that didn't purr.
Kowtow.
Sorry, said Rincewind.
Kowtow.
Swords were produced. I don't know what you mean, Rincewind wailed.
Kowtow, please,
whispered a voice by his ear. It was not a particularly friendly voice, but compared to all the other voices, it was positively affectionate. It sounded as though it belonged to quite a young man, and it was speaking very good Morporkian.
How? You don't know that. Kneel down, press your forehead on the ground. That's if you want to be able to wear a hat again.
Rincewind hesitated. He was a free-born Morporkian, and on the list of things a citizen didn't do was bow down to any, not to put too fine a point on it, foreigner. On the other hand, right at the top of the list of things a citizen didn't do was get their head chopped off.
That's better, that's good. How did you know you ought to tremble?
Oh, I thought that bit up myself. The hand beckoned with a finger. A guard slapped Rincewind in the face with a mud-encrusted, what I did. Rincewind clutched it guiltily as the guard scurried towards his master's digit. Voice, said Rincewind.
Yes.
What happens if I claim immunity because I'm a foreigner?
There's a special thing they do with a wire mesh waistcoat and a cheese grater.
Oh,
and there are torturers in Hung Hung who can keep a man alive for years.
I suppose you're not talking about healthy early morning runs and a high-fibre diet.
No. So keep quiet, and with any luck you'll be sent to be a slave in the palace.
Luck is my middle name, said Rincewind, indistinctly. Mind you, my first name is bad.
Remember to gibber and grovel.
I'll do my very best. The white hand emerged bearing a scrap of paper. The guard took it, turned towards Rincewind, and cleared his throat.
Hearken to the wisdom and justice of District Commissioner Key, ball of swamp emanations. Not him, I mean you.
He cleared his throat again and peered closer at the paper in the manner of one who learned to read by saying the name of each letter very carefully to himself.
The white pony runs through
The guard turned and held a whispered conversation with the curtains and turned back again.
Chrysanthemum blossoms. The cold wind stirs the apricot trees. Send him to the palace to slave until all appendages drop off.
Several of the other guards applauded.
Look up and clap,
said the voice. I'm afraid my appendages will drop off.
It's a big cheese grater.
Encore! Wow! Superb! That bit about the chrysanthemums! Wonderful!
Good. Listen. You're from Bespelagic. You've got the right accent, damned if I know why. It's a seaport, and people there are a little strange. You were robbed by bandits and escaped on one of their horses. That's why you haven't got your papers. You need pieces of paper for everything here, including being anybody, and pretend you don't know me.
I don't know you.
Good. Long live the changing things to a more equitable state while retaining due respect for the traditions of our forebears and, of course, not harming the august personage of the Emperor Endeavour.
Good. Yes.
What?
A guard kicked Rincewind in the region of the kidneys. This suggested, in the universal language of the boot, that he should get up. He managed to get up on one knee and saw the luggage. It wasn't his, and there were three of them. The luggage trotted to the crest of a low hill and stopped so fast that it left a lot of little grooves in the dirt. In addition to not having any equipment with which to think or feel, the luggage also had no means of seeing. The manner in which it perceived events was a complete mystery. It perceived other luggages. The three of them stood patiently in a line behind the palanquin. They were big. They were black. The luggage's legs disappeared inside its body. After a while, it very cautiously opened its lid, just a fraction. Of the three things that most people know about the horse, the third is that over a short distance, it can't run as fast as a man. As Rincewind had learned to his advantage, it has more legs to sort out. There are additional advantages if, A, the people on horseback aren't expecting you to run, and, B, you happen to be very conveniently in an athletic starting position. Rincewind rose like a boomerang curry from a sensitive stomach. There was a lot of shouting, but the comforting thing, the important thing, was that it was all behind him. It would soon try to catch him up, but that was a problem for the future. He could also consider where he was running to as well, but an experienced coward never bothered with the to, when the from held such fascination. A less practiced runner would have risked a glance behind, but Rincewind instinctively knew all about wind drag and the tendency of inconvenient rocks to position themselves under the unwary foot. Besides, why look behind? He was already running as fast as he could. Nothing he could see would make him run any faster. There was a large, shapeless village ahead, a construction apparently of mud and dung. In the fields in front of it, a dozen peasants looked up from their toil at the accelerating wizard. Perhaps it was Rincewind's imagination, but as he passed them, he could have sworn that he heard the cry, "Necessarily extended duration to the Red Army, regrettable decease without undue suffering to the forces of oppression." Rincewind dived through the huts as the soldiers charged at the peasants. Cohen had been right. There seemed to be a revolution, but the Empire had been in unchanged existence for thousands of years. Courtesy and respect for protocol were part of its very fabric, and by the sound of it, the revolutionaries had yet to master the art of impolite slogans. Rincewind preferred running to hiding. Hiding was all very well, but if you were found, then you were stuck. But the Village was the only cover for miles around, and some of the soldiers had horses. A man might be faster than a horse over a short distance, but over this panorama of flat open fields, a horse had a running man bang to rights. So he ducked into a building at random and pushed aside the first door he came to. It had pasted on it the words, "Examination. Silence." 40 expectant and slightly worried faces looked up at him from their writing stools. They weren't children, but full-grown adults. There was a lectern at the end of the room, and on it a pile of papers sealed with string and wax. Rincewind felt the atmosphere was familiar. He'd breathed it before, even if it had been a world away. It was full of those cold, sweaty odours created by the sudden realisation that it was probably too late to do that revision you'd kept on putting off. Rincewind had faced many horrors in his time, but none held quite the same place in the lexicon of dread as those few seconds after someone said, "Turn over your papers now." The candidates were watching him. There was shouting somewhere outside. He hurried up to the lectern, tore at the string, and distributed the papers as fast as he could. Then he dived back to the safety of the lectern, removed his hat, and was bent low when the door opened slowly. "Go away!" he screamed. "Examination in progress!" The unseen figure behind the door murmured something to someone else. The door was closed again. The candidates were still staring at him. "Very well. Turn over your papers." There was a rustle, a few moments of that dreadful silence, and then much activity with brushes. Competitive examinations. Oh, yes. That was another thing people knew about the Empire. They were the only way to get any kind of public post, and the security that brought. People had said that this must be a very good system, because it opened up opportunities for people of merit. Rincewind picked up a spare paper and read it. It was headed, "Examination for the post of Assistant Night Soil Operative for the District of Wung." He read question one. It required candidates to write a 16-line poem on evening mist over the reed beds. Question two seemed to be about the use of metaphor in some book Rincewind had never heard of. Then there was a question about music. Rincewind turned the paper over a couple of times. There didn't seem to be any mention anywhere of words like compost or bucket or wheelbarrow, but presumably all this produced a better class of person than the Ankh Morpork system, which asked just one question: "Got your own shovel, have you?" The shouting outside seemed to have died away. Rincewind risked poking his head out of the door. There was a commotion near the road, but it no longer seemed Rincewind orientated. He ran for it. The students got on with their examination. One of the more enterprising, however, rolled up his trouser leg and copied down a poem about mist he'd composed, at great effort, some time previously. After a while, you got to know what kind of questions the examiners asked. Rincewind trotted onwards, trying to keep to ditches wherever these weren't knee-deep in sucking mud. It wasn't a landscape built for concealment. The Agateans grew crops on any piece of ground the seeds wouldn't roll off. Apart from the occasional rocky outcrop, there was a distinct lack of places in which to lurk. No one paid him much attention once he'd left the village far behind. The occasional water buffalo operative would turn to watch him until he was out of sight, but displayed no special curiosity. It was merely that Rincewind was marginally more interesting than watching a water buffalo defecate. He kept the road just in sight and by evening reached a crossroads. There was an inn. Rincewind hadn't eaten since the leopard. The inn meant food, but food meant money. He was hungry, and he had no money. He chided himself for this kind of negative thinking. That was not the right approach. What he should do was go in and order a large, nourishing meal. Then, instead of being hungry with no money, he'd be well fed with no money. A net gain on his current position. Of course, the world was likely to raise some objections, but in Rincewind's experience there were few problems that couldn't be solved with a scream and a good 10 yards start. And of course, he would have just had a strengthening meal. Besides, he liked Hung Hungy's food. A few refugees had opened restaurants in Ankh Morpork, and Rincewind considered himself something of an expert on the dishes, such as dish of glistening brown stuff, dish of glistening crunchy orange stuff, and dish of soft white lumps. The one huge room was thick with smoke, and insofar as this could be determined through the swirls and coils, quite busy. A couple of old men were sitting in front of a complicated pile of ivory tiles, playing Shibo Yang Kong San. He wasn't sure what they were smoking, but by the looks on their faces, they were happy they'd chosen it. Rincewind made his way to the fireplace where a skinny man was tending a cauldron. He gave him a cheery smile. "Good morning. Can I partake of your famous delicacy, meal A for two people with extra prawn cracker?
Never heard of it.
Then could I see a painful ear, a croak of frog, a menu?
What's a menu, friend?
Rincewind nodded. He knew what it meant when a stranger called you friend like that. No one who called someone else friend was feeling very kindly disposed. What is there to eat, I meant?
Noodles, boiled cabbage, and pork whiskers.
Is that all?
Pork whiskers don't grow on trees, San.
I've been seeing water buffalo all day, Rincewind said. Don't you people ever eat beef? The ladle splashed into the cauldron. Somewhere behind him a shibo tile dropped onto the floor. The back of Rincewind's head prickled under the stairs.
"We don't serve rebels in this place," said the landlord loudly.
Probably too meaty, Rincewind thought. But it seemed to him that the words had been addressed to the world in general rather than to him. "Glad to hear it," he said, because...
"Yes, indeed," said the landlord a little louder. "No rebels welcome here."
"Well, that's fine by me, because
if I knew of any rebels, I would be certain to alert the authorities,"
the landlord bellowed. "I'm not a rebel, I'm just hungry," said Rincewind. "I'd, like a bowlful, please." A bowl was filled. Rainbow patterns shimmered on its oily surface.
"That'll be half a rhino," said the landlord.
"You mean you want me to pay before I eat it?" said Rincewind.
"You might not want to afterwards, friend."
A rhino was more gold than Rincewind had ever owned. He patted his pockets theatrically. "In fact, it seems that..." he began. There was a small thump beside him. What I did on my holidays had fallen onto the floor.
"Yes, thank you, that will do nicely," said the landlord to the room at large.
He pushed the bowl into Rincewind's hand, and in one movement scooped up the booklet and crammed it back into the wizard's pocket.
"Go and sit down in the corner," he hissed, "and you'll be told what to do."
"But I'm sure I know what to do. Dip spoon in bowl, raise spoon to mouth."
"Sit down."
Rincewind found the darkest corner and sat down. People were still watching him. To avoid the group gaze, he pulled out What I Did and opened it at random in an effort to find out why it had a magical effect on the landlord. "Sold me a bun containing what was called a complicated pictogram made entirely of the inside of pigs, urinating dog," he read. "And such as these could be bought for small coin at any time, and so replete were the citizens that hardly any bought these complicated pictogram from the stall of complicated pictogram, but it seemed to involve a razor, San." Sausages filled with pig parts, thought Rincewind. Well, perhaps they might be amazing if up until then a bowl of dishwater with something congealing on the top of it had been your idea of a hearty meal. "Ha! Mr. What I Did on My Holidays should try coming to Ankh Morpork next time and see how much he liked one of old Dibbler's sausages, full of genuine pig product." The spoon splashed into the bowl. Rincewind turned the pages hurriedly. "Peaceful streets along which I walked were quite free of crime and brigandage." "Of course they were, you four-eyed little git," shouted Rincewind. "That was because it was all happening to me. A city where all men are free." "Free? Free? Well, yes, free to starve, get robbed by the Thieves Guild," said Rincewind to the book. He fumbled through to another page. "My companion was the Great Wizard. Complicated pictogram, but now that Rincewind studied it, he realized with a plummeting heart it had a few lines that looked like the Agatean for wind. The most prominent and powerful wizard in the entire country."
"I never said that."
Rincewind stopped. Memory treacherously dredged up a few phrases such as, "Oh, the Arch-Chancellor listens to everything I say," and "That place would just fall down without me around." But that was just the sort of thing you said after a few beers. Surely no one would be so gullible as to write